This time on episode 272 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we discuss Runaways, Season 1, Episode 3, Destiny, weekly Marvel news, and your feedback.
I'm Chris Farrell from the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, a wacky weekend morning show, part of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out right now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and the opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
You have been granted clearance by Director Alfonso Mack McKenzie. Stand by for a S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
Welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. The show is recorded on Sunday, March 3rd, 2019, live from the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. studios and broadcast worldwide via www.geeks.live. Come on and join our live chat as we record. Ladies, it's Happy National I Want You to Be Happy Day.
I want you to be happy.
And I want you to be happy.
I want you to be happy.
That should be every day.
It should be.
Don't you think? I think so. Aww. Of course, in the comments, there is no way to find out who started this day. So it's hard to backtrack exactly who wanted to be who happy to begin with.
Does it really matter when you just want people to be happy?
No. No, we can just want everybody to be happy because we're Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., except for Thanos. We don't want him to be happy.
That's true. Listeners, we want you to be happy.
I do indeed. And listener, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., currently in the 41st hiatus week following the season 5 finale. The multiple Marvel television series and the Marvel cinematic and comic book universes in general.
Because of X-ray goggles against the patriarchy.
If you'd like to talk to us about X-ray goggles, you can visit our website, legendsofshield.com.
You can tell us your X-ray goggle stories at our voicemail, 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871.
You can find us on Facebook, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast.
You can hit us up on Twitter, at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You can watch our videos on YouTube, www.youtube.com/gonnageek.
You can tell your Amazon device to enable Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. skill.
You can tell us how you want to dismantle the patriarchy by joining our Discord server, chat at gunnageek.com/discord.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the gunnageek.com network.
Yes, we have been since the inception in 2013, a proud member of the gunnageek.com network. And just a little note here, that a little production note that our Captain Marvel special recording will actually happen on Tuesday, March 19th, 2019. And that is because it is the first and only time in March that all four of us that are regularly on this podcast, including Agent Haley, will be able to record together. Once again, we will be live the night of Tuesday, March 19th, 2019, if you want to join our live chat and talk about Captain Marvel. And as I just said, Agent Haley is not with us tonight. She is taking a personal day.
Bit of March Madness. Can you remind everyone what time they can join us?
It is going to be at
8:30 p.m. Eastern
or 5:30 p.m. Pacific time at geeks.live on Tuesday, March 19th. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Runaways, Season 1, Episode 3, called Destiny. It aired on November 21st, 2017 on Hulu. Lauren, who directed this episode of Runaways?
This episode was directed by Nina Lopez Corrado, who is not a new name on our podcast. She has 19 directing credits starting in 2012, so relatively recently. Oh my God, how was that 7 years ago? but she has episodes of The Mentalist, Frequency, The Librarians, The Flash, Criminal Minds, this episode of Runaways, Once Upon a Time, 4 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., 6 episodes of Supernatural, 1 episode of The Gifted, and 2 episodes of SWAT.
Michelle, who wrote this episode?
This episode was written by Kalinda Vasquez. 7 writing credits starting 2009, including 4 episodes of Prison Break, 2 Human Target, 7 Nikita, 10 Once Upon a Time, 2 Runaways, and 2 Fear the Walking Dead. And Runaways is based on the Marvel comics by Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Afona.
We always start our discussion off in the episode itself about the meaning of it, and we relate the meaning to the title. In this case, the title is Destiny. And obviously, to me, this means that they were writing an homage to Stargate Universe, the ship Destiny in Stargate Universe. So that is what this is all about, the Stargate Universe transgalactic ship Destiny.
It's also a reference to the name of the girl who was killed, question mark, and put in a pod last week, whose name was, in fact, Destiny. And that's always weird because I went to school with a girl named Destiny.
Oh, I thought it was, the secondary reason was that it was about the video game Destiny.
It could be, which I haven't played in a while because I didn't buy the expansion
pack.
Yeah. Because I was unhappy with what happened to one of the characters that I liked. And I am now currently playing Anthem, which is scratching a similar itch, but with that wonderful BioWare flavor.
All right, so you're telling me that it's not about the video game, it's not about the spaceship, it's about the character in Runaways called Destiny. Michelle, confirm that for me. It's about the character Destiny?
Yes, it's about the character of Destiny, but she sparks our kids into starting to team up and figure things out in a way you could say that they're starting their path to their destiny, which could be confronting their parents.
Oh, wow. Well, we're definitely going on that path, and the kids are flirting with absolute destruction this entire episode, which we knew was going to happen after the last couple of episodes, but this drives the story a little bit further. It starts off with the double funeral, though, and it was 10 years ago, and this is obviously Molly's parents, the Hernandezes, but it took me a little while to figure out that it was the Hernandezes, because there wasn't any particular thing about it other than it was 10 years ago to cue you in that it was the Hernandezes originally. And I might say that the actors that they got to play the little kids, the 10 years ago kids, you know, the 6 or 8 year old kids, they actually did a pretty good job of portraying their older kids.
Yeah, we see all the little kids, and including Nico's sister, whose name I can never remember because she doesn't exist in the comics.
Amy,
thank you. And we see teeny tiny baby Molly in a teeny tiny little wheelchair because she broke her leg, presumably in the fire that killed her parents.
Did you like all the autographs from all the other kids on there?
Yes, that was adorable. I broke my leg when I was about that old. And also, you know, you get your friends to sign your cast. Her cast was a lot cuter than mine. Mine was this horrific shade of blue and orange. And I wasn't in a wheelchair. I had crutches, teeny tiny little crutches that I hated. I would use them to hit people. And then I would just kind of hop around on one leg.
The doctor should have known not to give you any weapons.
Yeah. I was a really angry child for honestly no good reason.
Well, because you kept on getting hurt.
Well, I broke my leg kind of in a fight. There was a fight that started. I didn't break my leg in the fight. But while I was running away from the fight because I punched a kid in the face because he said I couldn't be Raphael because I was a girl, Raphael the Ninja Turtle. When I was running because he started chasing me, a friend of mine was jumping off the swings and landed on me and broke my leg.
Here, I thought you were going to say that you were trying to live out your video gaming of Tekken in real life.
Tekken didn't exist yet, as far as I remember. Tekken didn't exist for a few more years.
Okay.
Yeah. At that point, we were still very much in the Super Mario Brothers era.
I skipped that whole Nintendo era.
Oh, I lived for that. I didn't have one, but I went to my cousin's and I played it. And then me and my sister would get mad and beat each other with the control. We were really angry kids.
We'll have to explore that a little bit more therapy sessions in the future. We have the kids that are at the funeral 10 years ago, and then we have a little bit of the adult stuff. And some of the adult past is coming to light, like exactly what happened, including the fact that Mr. Dean has had some of his memory wiped. It took me until the second time I watched this to catch that. But the synergy drug, which apparently erases some of the memory, was actually used on him.
I didn't catch that at all.
Yes. The drug that they have, it basically convinces people to tell you things, and it helps interrogation, and then it can also help push memories. It's supposed to, the goal was to help PTSD people to relieve their trauma by augmenting their memories and making them easier to bear. But memory augmentation has risk and can be dangerous. And it really does explain perhaps what happened with Frank's career, because he was like the it guy and he seemed to be on one track, and then something happened and they say he's never been the same. And that can impact someone's acting career.
Just a little bit. Also, Tina shows up at the funeral and at the wake, for lack of a better term, post-funeral party, with a wrap around her hand. And Jeffrey thinks that she has something to do with the fire.
Yep. So that's a little suspicious. We find out that the Hayeses are paranoid that people are going to think they had something to do with it because they were the last ones to talk to Jean and Alice, the Hernandezes. So despite the fact that everyone's like, oh yeah, we're so close, we're already seeing these fractures and the distrust.
Now the kids have set up this 10 a.m. meeting, and it's obvious to me in retrospect that this is a Saturday. So it's 10 a.m. on Saturday, and they're meeting at the beach. And first of all, y'all had the same perception that I do, that it was kind of a cold day at the beach.
Well, I used to live in California, actually in Los Angeles. And because of the current that comes from Alaska, it's naturally cooler. And one of the things people forget that sometimes on certain days, that breeze comes in and it's cooler than you expect. And when like it would get darker and everything, I mean, there's a reason why it's always like 10 degrees cooler along the coast than in the valley, which that's where I lived. I lived in the valley. With it windy and with that current, yeah, it could be a little chilly.
Yeah, I don't live along the Pacific coast, but I live along the Texas Gulf Coast. And the temperatures along the coast do tend to be noticeably cooler than inland.
When they were filming it, it was obvious that they were trying to give the appearance that it was, you know, a normal day at the beach in California. And for those of us that don't live in California, like, ooh, yeah, swimsuits and sunshine and surfing and that sort of thing. But the kids show up and they're fully clothed and they're not like sweating or anything, so obviously it's a little cooler, plus you have a lot of the breeze coming off of the ocean. But that aside, they meet together and then they decide on what they're going to do. They break up into either their pairs or their singular tasks that they have to do, and they go off and do that. Before we leave the beach, one second is, if you've ever looked at a map and you've wanted to see where Brentwood is, it's quite a distance from the beach. So it's not like these guys are driving like 2 miles to the beach. It's way inland and they have to drive through the entire valley to get to the beach. So it's a long way for them.
We also have Carolina bringing her phone and saying, Destiny texted me and said that she's on a church trip to London. And there's a picture. And I'm like, well, Photoshop exists.
Yeah, that's what Nico says. You know, Photoshop much?
Yeah.
Definitely looked like a Photoshop picture, because the only thing right. You see in the background is Big Ben. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been to London. That shot is extremely difficult and it looks very much like that stock image and such.
So we'll have to find out who did the Photoshop later. I think I have a suspicion, but we'll get to that. I think it has to deal with what Michelle was telling us to look out for last episode, but we'll see.
What was his name? I keep thinking Kyle.
Vaughn.
Vaughn, yes, because he's named after Brian K. Vaughn, yes. I don't know why I keep thinking Kyle. He just looks like a Kyle.
Kind of does, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so they all split into their teams.
They do. Michelle, who do you want to start with?
I want to start with Gert and Chase. Gert, our wonderful dismantle the patriarchy, is starting to realize she has a crush on Chase. She's making any sort of excuse to be with him. She even gives Carolina a snide remark in order to get her to go away. She makes this excuse that, you know, my parents have tested on live subjects, so we have to go to my house and see if what Molly could be saying could be true about the dinosaur or whatever. And, oh, hey, look, I'm going to play with your x-ray goggles and accidentally look at your penis and things like that. I mean,
I was so happy when I saw those goggles because that's the exact design that Chase's goggles are in the comics. And I mean, they're a little goofy looking, but they managed to make them not too goofy looking. So it was just, again, anytime I see anything from the comics, I get just this nice little happy, just wee.
And they learn the pod is empty.
Also, what was up with the dildo with wings when they're trying to find out? They're using the x-ray goggles. Well, I guess actually I know what it could be because it just occurred to me. Because Molly's family are so, or Gert's family is so hippie and weird. There's this thing in ancient Rome. Okay, I'm trying to get, it's what we get the term fascinate from. It's called a fascinus. And what they are is they're with wings. And they're supposed to be for protection. They are little statues and necklaces, charms. And the word fascinate's derived from the verb fascinare, which is to practice magic or to bewitch. But they are spells to protect against the evil eye. Are they protecting themselves with weird Roman witchcraft from the Minoru's?
Maybe. Or maybe they're just trying to protect themselves.
But all I hear is dick with wings, and that's the first thing I think of, because again, I'm an ancient nerd Rome. An ancient Rome nerd.
Sure, we'll maybe go with both. That. Yeah. The two of them were great together up till the point where, without looking, because there's a window there in the door, without looking in the window, he goes ahead, Chase goes ahead, and he opens up the door and sets the dinosaur free amongst Brentwood. This is going to end really extremely well.
Yeah, Gert's like, calm down, dinosaur, calm down.
And it starts to listen to her.
Yes.
And we also learn that Gert has anxiety, and we learn about her medication.
Yes. She's talking to Molly earlier in the episode, and she mentions that she was around Molly's age when she started having panic attacks.
I liked how she started responding to Molly before Molly got to finish what she was trying to describe. So it's just a standard case of not really listening to somebody else and assuming you know what's going on. And Molly is trying to describe the changes she's going through, and she doesn't quite get there. I think Gert needs to listen a little bit better.
This is a thing that happens with Molly in the comics too, because again, in the comics, she's 10, 11 years old, and everybody talks over her. Everybody assumes, oh, you're so little and cute. I've been rereading When I Couldn't Sleep earlier this week, the current run of Runaways. And there's the first arc or so focuses a lot on Gert and Molly. Actually, I'm on the second arc. The second arc really focuses a lot on Molly and on her feeling overlooked and feeling like she's too young in a lot of ways, and her anxiety about her age and things like that, and being the youngest of the group. And I feel like we're getting a lot of that here is, you know, she's the youngest of this group. She's the little sister, and everybody thinks they know better than her.
We learn a little bit about Molly here. We learn that she doesn't ever have to worry about money. And that was back 10 years ago at the funeral. In truth, I think whoever is the trustee of that could reappropriate the funds, which might have happened. But 10 years ago, as it was, she didn't have to worry about Molly. We also get another scene where she uses her powers to escape, by the way. We'll get into that in a second. And then falls asleep right afterwards. Again, she's using her powers and straining herself and just falling asleep. I'm wondering when she's going to start connecting those dots, because it really put her in an awkward place. And she said, oh, dang, as she was passing out. So I'm thinking she is understanding a little bit of that. And she also has to act quick on her feet to deal with some questioning coming from a parent. So do you guys want to talk about the escape first or the questioning?
We have so many kids lying this episode.
I can't believe her escape, because it's about the hair clip. And we learn why the hair clip is very important. It's what she's had since she was a kid. Her mom actually gave it to her. That's why she is wearing it. In the first scene with her, she's very angry because she can't find it.
And we see her wearing it in the funeral flashback.
And Catherine Wilder we have to question her. And she gets the drug out. This woman is ready to drug a 14-year-old girl to get some information and to augment. Like, this really shows just how twisted this is. She's really actually thinking about doing it. And Gert lies that she tries to escape by ripping out the toilet and then the bars.
Yeah, taking out half the window by grabbing the barred window and ripping it out. And then it basically takes out half the wall and she escapes through there. All the while, by the way, Catherine Wilder, when she finds her out in the back alley by the dumpster, does not even question how the heck she got out of the bathroom, just tries to grab her and throw her in the back of her SUV because she needs to question her.
Also, I love Molly distracting her with the whole... Well, first of all, she's like, yeah, I need to go to the bathroom. I'm going through some changes. And then afterwards, she's like, I lied. I was the lookout. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm so young and everything. And just doing an excellent job of lying on her feet there.
They wanted some booze.
Which is true, actually. Chase was the one who was going for it.
Every good lie has a little bit of the truth in it.
But again, Catherine doesn't even look at how Molly escapes. And do you guys ever wonder if Catherine went back inside the store and grabbed her stuff? Because she left it on the table. Molly did. Like her phone and her books and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I would think for a teenager, the phone would be the ultimate thing that you would have to make sure that you had.
For pretty much anyone. I mean, nowadays, your phone is basically your second brain.
So it kind of shocked me that she left and got up to go to the bathroom and didn't even take her phone. But okay.
And again, she was panicking.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to come up yet or not. I suspect it won't, but I guess it's a continuity thing that I thought of. Anyway, I assume that she was taken back to her car, or, well, she's 14. She doesn't have a car, or her house. And that's how that whole thing ended up. So we talked about Chase and Gert and Molly. Let's talk about Nico and Alex. Michelle, you want to talk about Nico first?
Yeah, Nico's job is to find out what happens with the wand, what exactly that is. And we learn that Robert and Tina, their marriage is on the rocks. Tina wants to, you know, go on a date night and such. And Nico's like, yeah, go. Yeah, do that. And she uses it as a cover to find the wand. And she also finds out that her mom has taken Amy's diary. And we also learn, I think it's very interesting, the alpha user is 4 miles away.
Traffic in LA, even Brentwood, has got to move slowly. So 4 miles could take a very long time. So I get why the kids had enough time to actually clean up all the snow. Although I would think the carpet would be a little wet. So I have a question for you guys, and maybe you know, because maybe you've seen further. Well, Michelle, I know you did. I don't know, Lauren, if you know or not. I don't know what the manual override was. I don't know if it was the drawer coming open with the diary in it, or one of the words that she spoke actually activated, like maybe diary, a verbal diary was the manual override. I don't know.
Michelle, did she cut herself when she was opening?
I can't remember, because I know it has something to do with the desk.
Okay.
I didn't catch exactly. I watched it twice, and I didn't catch what it was the first time I backed it up. The first time I watched it, and I didn't catch it again. I thought, I'll watch it again later when I'm on the elliptical, which I did. And I, again, I still, the two things that equated to me were that she opened the door or the drawer or one of the words that she said. I don't know if we'll find out in the future or not.
The staff here, again, does not work the same way it does in the comics. In the comics, it emerges from the user, from inside whoever is wielding it, instead of being stored in a drawer.
Well, it wasn't stored in a drawer. It's hung on the wall. But yeah, it would still be different.
Well, yeah, from being displayed.
And I'm kind of wondering why Nico didn't just want to drop the staff, because she calls Alex. Alex has enough time to drive over there, and she's still holding the staff. It's still snowing in her mom's office.
I'd imagine she's been there trying different stuff to try and stop it.
And she doesn't think about dropping the staff ever?
Maybe she did, because it stops when Alex touches it. Alex is not a Minoru.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Alex is not Tina's kid in any way. So it's basically like, oh, you should not be, you are not an approved user. Manual shutdown.
Well, in any case, Nico and Alex, when Nico's mom comes home, they have to figure out some way to try to get out of the fact that they're snooping around. And they decide to feint the fact that they were making out on Nico's bed. And it's really kind of awkward because neither of them have done it before, but it was kind of cute and interesting the way how that planned out, and it covered perfectly. I mean, these kids are doing great with these adults that don't ask more questions than they should.
Yeah, the adults are so preoccupied with their own thing that pretty much a surface cover story will cover it. All she sees is, my daughter wanted me out of the house. I come home. My daughter is in her bra with a boy on the bed.
But they do get to kiss outside later.
Well, Alex kisses Nico.
And they're both happy. They both smile afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we move back to Alex, I want to cover Nico's parents, because something interesting happens. So they go out for a night and Nico's like, get out of the house, whatever. So they go out for food, whatever. And it's not going well. Robert.
Yeah, they're having a good time. Then Tina starts being like, hey, I got us a hotel room. And Robert's like, okay, we barely talk for like 2 years. And now all of a sudden you want us to just be okay again? I can't. And Tina gets upset and leaves. Well, no, Robert leaves and Tina's really upset. And that's when she goes home.
I think this is all planned from Robert from the get-go, because I think he's had a meet scheduled with Janet later on in the night all the time, which we find out who the affair is with. It's with Robert.
Yep. Which, I mean, I can't really blame them, because Robert's in a marriage that's grown distant. Janet's in an abusive marriage. Janet signed Chase's mom. And we see Victor Stein is just, earlier when he's talking to her, he has that like quiet rage going, and I was just like sinking in on the couch. He's scary. And also he's hallucinating Destiny because he's been up all night and stressed and possibly guilty. So that's not good.
Oh, is that all it was? It was a hallucination? It wasn't like a projection from the box or anything?
No.
No.
Okay. All right, so let's move back to Alex, since we've dealt with the affair now. That's about as far as I want to go into it. If you guys want to talk about it further, that's fine. But I want to move on
to
Alex.
They're having an affair, end of affair.
So Alex does what his task was, and it was try to explore the basement a little bit. And they know how to open the door, but they don't know much more than that. And Alex's dad, Jeffrey, comes home as well, or actually he's already home when the door's open. And then Alex is like, how do I get this thing shut? We still don't know how the thing shuts or opens from the inside. But he gets out of it, right, Michelle?
Yeah, surprisingly, when they go into the room, it's closed, and he's just as surprised as we are. I love that whole calling you within the house. Like, where are you in the house? Using the phone, where are you in the house?
That's how you know your house is too damn big.
True story. I have several Amazon personal assistant devices. There's actually one in front of me right now. And I've discovered how to use them as a broadcast machine. And that's how I, when I'm in a remote part of the house, I communicate with everybody. My house is not that big, by the way. But that is how I communicate with remote parts of the house and get somebody to either come help or find out where the kids are or something like that. So that's how I do it. It's a little bit easier these days.
That's fair. But they seem to have a house that could function as a museum for three people. They have enough room to have a secret sacrifice basement. That house is too damn big.
And there's a guest house.
But no pool, which is odd. Or maybe there is and we haven't seen it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And we also need to talk a bit about Carolina.
Yes.
Who we see trying to meditate at one point. I thought I heard my voice.
Right.
That was weird because I was just playing Anthem and Leslie Dean is in it as a spy who you talk to a lot. So it was, I thought I heard my voice. Oh, wait, is that Tassin? Wait, no.
So Lauren, have you seen Beyond This or is this the last episode you watched?
This was the last episode that I watched the first time I tried to watch it. I watched all three episodes that dropped that first day. And then I had so much stuff to do that I haven't had a chance to. I really kind of want to watch ahead because I'm so excited. But again, I have so much stuff to do and watch. And
I was thinking that too. This would be, we had eight episodes. This would be an easy blow through on a weekend or something like that. But I have a question for you since you haven't seen any further. Carolina, she meets up with Vaughn in the middle of the hallway and they're discussing the whole Destiny thing. We talked about that before. She lets on that fact that she's taken off her bracelet to Vaughn and then says something about the sparkly lights or whatever. I think Vaughn does a very good job either of not knowing anything or covering up what he might be thinking. So basically, I'm asking you, do you think she just gave away to Vaughn the fact that she took off the bracelet and then keyed Vaughn into the fact that she might be discovering her powers?
I think that it might be one of those things that he's going to remember later. You know, Vaughn will remember this.
That's what I was thinking as well. And he didn't have a chance to talk through it with Carolina's mom because the whole thing happened with finding Destiny and she had to go find a TV to watch the news and find out that Destiny had been found. So are we all in agreement here that Victor has killed Destiny and buried her?
Yes. When we see him hallucinate her, she's covered in mud. And then again, we find the newscast that she's dead.
Okay.
Also, when Leslie is talking to Figure in the 2001 room, he's got nothing. He's like, oh, this isn't like the other times. I'm not feeling anything.
Okay. Michelle, is there anything else you'd like to talk about in this episode?
We learned that Carolina's grandfather not only started the church, but he has that painting. And if you look at the painting and the colors of the painting, and you look at Carolina, there's a connection there.
It's pretty damn similar.
Yeah, it looked this similar. Although, if I was just doing a church, I could see that as not being it. But it's too, I mean, we're into coincidences. It's a Marvel
property.
Looks
like your grandfather was on a lot of peyote. Yeah, thanks, Vaughn.
Which, by the way, I don't know anything about peyote, but I looked it up in WebMD and it basically said, don't do it. So I'm not going to do it.
Well, you can do it, but if you have certain medical conditions, you shouldn't. And technically, you can only do so in the United States if you are a member of a Native American religion. You can only do so legally. I have a cousin who does it religiously. He's a member of the Potawatomi Nation. So,
okay. Anything from your standpoint on the episode, Lauren?
I just want to binge. I just want to binge it. I've been rereading the comics and going through the latest stuff and just, I forgot how much I love these comics. I just love them so much. Just, if you take away anything from this show, go back and reread the original Brian K. Vaughan run and honestly, the current run is also really fantastic, but read the Brian K. Vaughan run first. It's so good. They're so good.
I'm really enjoying this series, the season, and looking forward to it. I do want to binge, but I tempered myself. I'm like, well, we'll just take it one at a time. But I do want to go ahead and binge it, which I don't always with TV series. You guys know that. Next Sunday, we will be covering the fourth episode of the first season of Runaways called 15. And that will be fun.
We have some news for you. First up is Black Panther at the Oscars.
The Oscars were last Sunday, and Black Panther won 3, which were Marvel's first ever Oscar wins. And they were historic in a number of other ways, too. So Ruth E. Carter won Best Costume Design. Hannah Beechler won Best Production Design. And Ludwig Göransson won Best Original Score. In addition to these being Marvel's first ever wins, Ruth Carter is the first Black woman who has ever won the Oscar for Best Costume Design. She's the first Black woman who ever won the Oscar for Best Costume Design. And Hannah Beechler is the first ever Black woman who has won for production design. And they are also the second and third Black women ever to win an Oscar outside of the Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress categories. When we talk about what an important movie Black Panther was, I tweeted about this on that night. It's not only that, hey, it was a good movie, it was a fun movie. It's the fact that Ryan Coogler actively reached out and sought people to hire from a historically underrepresented community. And this industry, the entertainment industry, is so highly dependent on who you know. And people don't get hired unless they know somebody. And you don't become somebody who people know unless somebody's willing to reach out and give you a hand. I went to go see Ruth E. Carter talk at Comic Palooza last year, and I believe I brought in the recording. And she talked about how when she was, well, first of all, she talked about just the sheer amount of research she did. I was so happy when she won. I was honestly weeping. I was so happy. And she talked about how she went to go to just, she would find people who were just selling stuff like on Etsy and things like that. There was this one woman who did a lot of the jewelry for the movie, who handmade jewelry, and she hired her. And now this woman is working in Hollywood. And when I talk about the composer, he actually went to Africa and spent time in the communities that he was studying and hoping to represent so that he could represent that particular sound in the movie. And this is the type of research and care that I think should be rewarded in both the awards level and in fan level. So congratulations, Black Panther. Congratulations, Marvel. Congratulations, Ryan Coogler. And congratulations to Ruth Carter and Hannah Beechler and Ludwig. I'm blanking out on his last name because I just closed the window. Ludwig Göransson.
I want to point out that I think these wins are a lot more legitimate than the Suicide Squad Oscar win. It's definitely night and day as far as which picture deserved an Oscar and which didn't. I know there's a lot of kidding with me with Suicide Squad, both here and on Sterling Tribune about that, but this is an obvious point to me that this film is a lot more deserving of Academy acclaim than Suicide Squad.
I remember when we talked about the film that we said if it didn't at least get nominated, it would be a crime in all those categories.
I was so getting ready when Best Costume came out. I every year, I'm not going to watch the Oscars. And every year I end up in front of the TV with a drink in my hand, just angrily drinking and getting ready to be mad. So Best Costumes comes up and I'm getting ready to be angry. Oh, and again, congratulations, Marvel. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Picture. But I'm getting ready to be angry because I was so sure that Ruth Carter was about to be stiffed for Best Costume. And then it happened and I just started crying. I was so happy. I'm so glad I got the chance to meet her and speak with her. She's a wonderful woman. She's incredibly gracious, incredibly intelligent. If you get the chance to see her speak at a convention, please do. She's wonderful.
Moving on to other movie news. Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson sing Shallow?
Shallow is from the movie A Star is Born, the more recent iteration with Lady Gaga and Rocket Raccoon himself, Bradley Cooper. And Shallow won Best Song at the Oscars. Brie Larson and Sam Jackson were on the Jonathan Ross show in the UK, and they were talking, and Jonathan Ross pointed out that Brie Larson released an album when she was younger called Finally Out of P.E. Brie Larson can sing. If you've ever seen her in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, she sang in that movie. She's amazing. And they started singing. First, she started singing a song from Cats. And then they started singing Shallow. She starts belting it out. And then she just sang as much as she knew the words. It's very cute. We have a link. It's adorable. They're adorable. I love them. Their press tour is amazing.
Check for the link in the show notes.
There's news about the Eternals casting.
The Eternals is one of Marvel's slated upcoming movies. And they are planning, Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige et al., is planning to try and make history by having the first openly gay actor leading one of their movies. They want to cast an openly gay actor of any ethnicity, ages 30 to 49, who physically looks like a superhero, as the film's lead. It's unclear at this time whether this character is from one of the Marvel comics, and if so, which character. But if they do so, it will mark the first MCU movie co-headlined by a member of the LGBTQ community. We have a lot of LGBTQ characters as side characters, as background characters, actors, I should say. But we don't... Okay, so we've had Ian McKellen, who is openly gay, as Magneto. But that's a bad guy, arguably. I maintain Magneto was right. We have Alan Cumming, who is openly bisexual, as Nightcrawler. Ellen Page, who's openly a lesbian, as Kitty Pryde. Anna Paquin, openly bisexual, as Rogue. But those are all not Marvel-produced. They were, you know, back in the day, and they weren't arguably the main character, which would be Wolverine for those movies. On the DC side, Ezra Miller, who is openly, I think he just identifies as queer, has appeared as The Flash. Matt Bomer, who is openly gay, is in Doom Patrol. Wentworth Miller, who is openly gay, Victor Garber, also openly gay, both on in the Arrowverse series. But those aren't movies. So we'll see. I'm hoping that they actually keep that promise. That would be nice.
The MCU looks very silly without special effects.
I would like to contest that headline. I think it looks incredibly interesting. This is an article from io9. There's a video linked from GamesRadar. It's about, I don't know, a 6 or 7 minute video, taking just a bunch of scenes from various MCU movies, showing them without the special effects, how they build the special effects. I think this is fascinating. You can really see how things have progressed from back in the day with just matte paintings and with stop motion. You see them building the skeleton and musculature of Rocket Raccoon and Fenrir. You see the way they build the backgrounds and the structures of buildings and of ships. You see what exactly was practical and what wasn't. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, they're just acting against a green screen. Well, not really. There is actually stuff there for people to interact with. And honestly, acting is mostly just let's pretend anyway. More so when it's something huge and grandiose. I can't claim to be an actor like they are, but I do spend a lot of my day with the headphones on, yelling into a microphone, pretending to be someone else. It's a lot of just in your mind, imagining what's going on. I think this video is amazing. If you get a chance, please watch it. Special effects are the coolest thing.
I agree. Special effects are great, but to the average viewer, I'm sure I geek out about that stuff, but I don't know if the average viewer would.
Do you remember seeing back when Battlestar Galactica was on the air? There was some behind the scenes video they did of, I forget which scene, but you realize how little of some of the sets there actually was. It was fascinating.
Well, I know when, I mean, it was obvious if you're going down a hallway, you've seen the same hallway 10 different times, maybe from different angles, but you've seen the same hallway different times. Actually, if I remember correctly, the CIC in Battlestar Galactica did have the CIC and then the surrounding corridors to it.
Maybe I'm thinking of Caprica, but there was some set. Maybe it was, no, it was on Caprica the planet. There was some stuff there that looked really good. Maybe it was Caprica the show, but anyway. And it looked really good. And there was a behind the scenes thing, and there was everything in the foreground was real. Oh, no, no, no. It was the scene with the piano where.
Oh, yeah.
Kara's dad playing the piano. And they did a behind the scenes thing, and everything beyond, it was all green screen. It was all CGI. But everything has gotten so good in the past few years that you kind of have to be looking for it. If you're doing everything subtly, it's just so good.
And a movie I'm sure that has a ton of special effects is Dark Phoenix.
The second trailer for Dark Phoenix came out this week, and it's having some mixed reactions. Have either of you had the chance to watch it?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched it a few times, actually.
So I will be watching it. I am not sure what I think about one of the plot developments from the movie, given that we see in the trailer. I know there was an international trailer that was released earlier this week where we get to see a little bit more, but it was taken down and now I can't find it. And I didn't really want to look any harder because I wanted to play some Anthem before we started recording. And there's stuff that I like. There's stuff that I don't like. I did like a reaction that I saw on Twitter that was, Rebecca Romijn did not slide naked across a steel floor under a closing door on her bare for this.
One thing to keep in mind with the Dark Phoenix is, we don't know for sure, but we're pretty sure that this will be the last mutant combo movie that Fox puts out before it is purchased by Disney. I think that is still in progress and probably going to be finalized pretty soon. Who knows, could take another year or so, but I think Fox is at the point where they're not going to start any new major project until the characters revert back to Disney and Marvel. So this is going to be your last chance, if I'm correct, to see the ensemble cast, because this is mostly the same cast that you've been seeing in the Days of Future Past universe for the mutants. And while, well, I'll leave some of my comments for later because we're going to talk about it again later. But that's just one thing to keep in mind, that this might be the last time you get to see these mutants in this type of scenario.
I like so many of these actors. X-Men First Class is still one of my favorite superhero movies because it's so fun and stylish. Matthew Vaughn did a great job. We'll see. I really love the Dark Phoenix storyline from the comics and the cartoon so much. We'll see what they do. And I love Jessica Chastain. In fact, I kind of want to go watch Crimson Peak again right now. We'll see.
Of course, whenever you mention the cartoon, I automatically hear the theme song.
Right.
And that's what we have for the news. We have feedback from different sources this week. We're going to start with Twitter. We heard from @AdonnaGirl.
AdonnaGirl sent us a message that she had while watching Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I think it was very gentlemanly for Steve to put the arms back on and set the shield in place after he stripped himself. I've worked in retail with mannequins, and if a customer needed something off one, it's not unusual for them to do it themselves and leave the mannequin armless. So I was lucky enough to never work in clothing retail, but my sister used to work at an outlet mall that would get floods of people in on Black Friday. And according to her, it was like locusts. So my sympathies.
Yeah, all my kids have worked retail now, specifically for Black Friday, and they all kind of get it. So hopefully this will make them a little bit more sympathetic in the future if they go out on Black Friday shopping. I prefer my cyber shopping. It's much less stressful.
And then we heard from Stargate Pioneer on Discord.
My stars. Yes, Stargate Pioneer said, in regards to X-Men, you know, I should have asked if SP wanted to read this.
I'll go ahead. So I was shocked at Lauren. She put this in the show notes, but very grateful to be selected as one of the feedbacks And this was in the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. channel in our Discord server, which you can find at goodageek.com/discord. But here's what I wrote. Apocalypse was terrible, but Logan was incredible. I'm in for one last Fox ride before Disney takes over the big screen mutants. I'll decide if I like it or not after I see it. It's too bad Logan couldn't have been their swan song, but I wouldn't want Apocalypse to be the last team-up film. It's also too bad Hugh Jackman couldn't have done this one too, but it is what it is. Within a month, we will have a definitive change-up movie in Endgame and Dark Phoenix. The real question is, what's next for Disney?
Did y'all notice we got a good old Scott Jean in the trailer?
I did.
I had myself a good laugh.
So this is what I wanted to talk about before, is that it's too bad Logan couldn't have been the last film, because I think Logan kind of is the last film for this set of mutants, but they couldn't do it because of timelines, and they went ahead with the production of Last Phoenix, which was probably already in production when Disney bought him. And it's also too bad Hugh Jackman can't be a part of this, because I think he's deserved it, but he's also deserved to go eat a cheeseburger. And I've seen him recently, by the way, and he's doing fine. He's just fine. But this is what it is. I am not going to extend judgment until I see it, as I said in that feedback. I don't know if you guys are going to or not. And there's a whole deal with IMDb, or not IMDb, but Rotten Tomatoes right now. That's really not, I don't care for that at all.
I didn't include that in the news, but yes, because of so many people review bombing movies, that especially those with black leads, with female leads. Right now, Captain Marvel is the latest recipient of this. People going in and giving it one star and saying just how horrible it is, even though it's not even out yet. People who haven't seen the movie, Rotten Tomatoes has disabled commenting and reviewing for people who haven't seen the movie.
And I kind of agree with the fact that you're dealing with the review bombing part of it, but it's unfortunate, as it's been put to me, and I will agree with it. It's unfortunate that the first one out of the gate is a Disney-based property, Captain Marvel, and allegedly because they are reeling from the last major Star Wars movie and the review bombing that happened for that. I'll leave that discussion alone, because I really didn't want to get into it right now anyway, but I am going to wait to figure out if I like it or not until after I see it. And I am going to see it. Is it going to be an opening night? No, but I am going to go see it. Then we'll see where it goes from there. The other thing that I want to point out here is you're going to have Captain Marvel followed really closely by Endgame, and then you're going to have Dark Phoenix with Endgame within a month. Disney has not released their post-Endgame schedule for what they currently have. I don't know if they're going to include the mutants or not in what they have in the future, but obviously this is a great time for a shakeup for both lines. So you could bring the mutants into the line, whether that's bringing the current mutants from Fox into the line or casting all new, and you could go on from there. We've speculated before, but we haven't seriously talked about it. This is going to happen within months. So we'll see what Disney does.
And our last comment is from YouTube.
So we had a comment on one of our episodes. It was specifically one of our Punisher episodes, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., episode 263, Crosshairs. And user American Liberty said, Odin, the Marvel version, is a bad dad. He benevolently rules over a peaceful kingdom and offers every convenience of wealth and luxury to his boys, of which one is the son of his enemy, and he still raises him as one of his own. So why exactly is he a bad dad? Is it because he won't allow his spoiled brat son Thor take over the kingdom? Or maybe because he doesn't get his children to spend their entire lives discounting his warnings about their sister? Which, the way the movies portray these characters, they would. Ragnarok is a prophecy everyone in the kingdom is aware of. Everyone, if they believe, knows it will come to pass. No one behaves as if they think it will happen during their lifetime. So Odin is doing them all a favor, not knowing when he will die, to create an environment in which the unnecessary burden of contemplating the end of Asgard is replaced with enjoying it while it is. Sounds like a pretty good guy to me.
I'm reading this comment. I'm going back to Independence Day, you know, the original movie, not the sequel that was a couple years ago. Remember on the tower in LA where there was a bunch of people that were welcoming the aliens and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I'm picturing that in Asgard.
Yes, where they're like, aliens, you know, we love you. Come along, you know, let's have some fun. And then they all die.
Yeah, in this case, it would be Ragnarok. Ragnarok, it's coming. The end is coming. Ragnarok is coming. That sort of thing, yeah.
So personally, whenever I joke about Odin being a bad dad, it's mostly because there was a bunch of bad dad Odin memes from when Thor 1 was first released with the whole convenient Odin sleep thing. Odin, as portrayed in the movies, is actually not such a terrible dad. He made some bad decisions. Some people, nobody's perfect. And it seems that earlier in his life, he really wasn't the best guy. But he seems to have at least tried to change for the better in his later life. And I think you got to give him that.
So I can't remember if you were part of that episode or not, but we had a whole discussion at the end about who the worst dad in Marvel Cinematic Universe was. And Odin was at the top of that list. He wasn't alone. We went through some pretty terrible dads, including Stark and Star-Lord's dad and whatever.
How can you put him above Ego? Ego's a terrible dad.
See, I brought up Ego, but the tide was against me with Odin. So the question is, who's the worst dad in the MCU? So listener, if you want to chime in with who's the worst MCU dad, please do so.
Thanos. Remember when he like physically tortured Nebula and took her apart and kidnapped his children?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Thanos was brought up.
Yeah.
But everyone, my thing is that everyone goes to, okay, Thanos is obviously like the worst dad ever. Ego is more of a sperm spreader than actual father. I think for me, it's, I was lied to. It's that whole raising your children in ignorance does harm. Loki being lied to about him being adopted and everything, that sets Loki into an awful direction. And that I connect with that because my father is adopted, and that was like hidden for me, and it was revealed to me in a very horrible way. Mm. So when you're lied to about where you come from, where you're told like, this is, oh no, this is it. This is like who you are. And then it shattered that way. And then in a way it was tried to be played off. And then they had to admit the truth. It's very harmful. So for me, Odin was irresponsible in that.
I can see
there could have been a way for him to have sat Loki down in the thousands of years that he was his father and explained, Loki, this is where you're from. This is where you're from. Because also Loki had a very tight bond with his mother. Okay? Mom and dad sitting Loki down and calmly, you know, talking about it with him would have been the better course of action instead of just, let's just lie to him forever.
Yeah.
All right, so Lauren, you can think about it. You don't have to give your answer now. Who's the worst MCU dad? And we did limit it to the MCU.
Okay, limited to the MCU. That counts the TV shows or just the movies?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we can stretch it there, but we wanted to limit it to the MCU, so we didn't want to go into like the Fox properties or anything.
Okay, because top of my head, Thanos.
Okay. So listener, once again, you have the ability to get back with us on who you think the worst MCU dad is. So in the meantime, guys, we got something important to do. We got to go over to Brentwood and chase down this dinosaur. Get this one out. I just want to thank everybody that has suggested that we do Runaways because I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And it's definitely been a long time coming since it was out in 2017. So a year and a half, November 2017, as we're recording now. So thank you. And then I'm definitely looking forward to whenever we get to Cloak and Dagger as well. And we're going to finish off the Netflix series at some point. So thank you very much for everybody that has suggested Runaways.
Thank you to everybody who listens to us and sends us stuff. We really, really appreciate it. You make our lives a little bit easier, and knowing that you're out there and that we're not just yelling into a void makes us feel a little bit better about ourselves. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for communicating with us on Twitter, Discord, YouTube. We enjoy it. We appreciate it. Again, we talked about this before, about how there's just so much in the world to consume. So the fact that you take your time out to listen to us means a lot.
Does indeed. Until next time, I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
See you guys next week. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin McLeod, found at incompetech.com, and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
Sorry.
You couldn't hear me. Hi, Michelle.
Oh, hi. I didn't mean just like greet you with a cough.
I've heard worse. Usually it's a lot of swearing and.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a little bit of berating and, you know, sometimes it ends with you're fired. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Every day it's something new. It's either in the 70s or it's in the 40s. And if it's not one, it's the other. And my joints are not happy.
I think it was Wednesday last week. We had a huge windstorm and I've got one of those patio tables, which we don't take in during the winter because we don't have space for it. We take all the other furniture in and throw it in the garage, but like the chairs and the little end tables and stuff like that. But we can't take the table anywhere. I suppose we could. No, we couldn't. Scratch that. Because I was going to say, maybe if we took the legs off, but you can't on the patio table. Anyway, it has 15 12-inch by 12-inch tiles in it. And when it gets really windy, when we have a really big windstorm, what will happen is the table will act like a wing on an aircraft, and it will actually lift the tiles up. And what happened in this particular case, I think, is the entire table got lifted up a little bit and then in a big gust and five or six tiles just flew off and landed on the patio, broke, shattered. Well, when it was tipping over, there's an umbrella stand, a weighted umbrella stand in the middle that's supposed to anchor the whole thing. That must have bent enough sideways force that it broke the tile that it was in. There's a hole in the middle of the tile. So now, not only do I have to buy 15 new, well, to match anyway, 15 new 12-inch by 12-inch tiles to put in there. Now I got to figure out how to drill a circular hole in the middle of one, which if you've ever dealt with tile ever in your life, drilling an exact circular hole in the middle of one is impossible.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to figure that one out. And then our cover on our wood pile just shredded. Oh my gosh. It was actually the remnants of it, the tatters of it, was entangled in the wooden fence behind it. I had to go out with a knife yesterday and just cut everything out. So yeah, it's been a weird, and now we're in a blizzard. So it's been a weird spring.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, she's good.
Yes.
She's good.
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, I decided to reword the, I took the Netflix out.
That's, yeah. Thank you. Makes things a lot easier.
Good. I didn't catch that. Thanks for telling me. Of course, I wouldn't have mattered anyway. I would have read what was there, so.
And a Ron Burgundy it.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. I got lucky. A couple of weeks ago, we were on Starling Tribune, and Michelle intentionally took out a thing that we do because there was no news, so I just didn't do the lead into the, or we didn't do that in the document, the lead into the news. But then I decided on the fly that let's go ahead and do that to enunciate the fact that there was no news and that we weren't going to talk about it. And once we got there and I played the bump, I realized that little saying that I do every time wasn't there. So I had to do it on memory. And fortunately, I remembered because I've been doing it every week for like a year or so.
Well, do you remember the time I said I was Haley?
Yeah, I do. That was great.
I'm just so used to Haley going after you. I was like, okay, go by memory.
I'm Agent Haley. Do you guys realize why the order is the way it is in the intro and the outro?
No.
It's in order of when we became part of the cast.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I know why. I knew that's why I was last.
So I guested on a couple of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. before I took over the podcast. And then Haley was on with me and Will. And then, Lauren, you know a little bit what happened there because both Haley and Wing approached you to be part of the cast. So Will left, Lauren came in, and then Michelle, we've added you on as full time. So that's the way it is. So does anybody have anything else to say before we record?
Nope.
Hopefully Pike Trickleg will behave himself.
Doubtful.
He's asleep on Scott's computer tower. So.
Okay.
We'll see how long that lasts. I'm so happy. I did some auditions yesterday and I got to go full on evil villain in one of them. And it was fun. And then I got to do sheep noises and Tonks was horrified. He doesn't like it when I do creature noises. It scares him.
How about a cat noises? Can you meow at him?
I can. And he hates it. Look.
Oh my God. He does. He's getting up. He's like, what's wrong? What are you doing?
He hates it so much.
Wow.
Poor kitty.
So I was going to play Anthem last night, but I decided to watch The Last Man instead. I think
How was it?
Worth the trade, but I think From the Earth to the Moon was a much better description of how that whole thing went off, but it went into a little bit more detail on the Gemini 8 failure. And Neil's failure with the lander trainer. Mm. But it was very silent film, little dialogue, drama and suspense, like in the background. So mm-hmm. It was more of an artsy thing. And it was more of the, how did this affect Neil personally and his wife personally, especially because of their daughter, Karen, dying at almost 3 from brain cancer. Mm. And that was before the whole NASA thing. Matter of fact, Karen's death is what drove him to apply to be an astronaut.
Guys, did any of you watch The Masked Singer?
I watched the first episode and I've mostly just been keeping up with it via...
Who was the blue-headed guy?
The monster. Okay, this is what's weird. Okay, my mom got me involved in this. Okay, because yeah. I missed the first episode, but then I watched the second episode with her and she's like, gosh, I don't know who that is. I'm like, oh, well, that's easy. That's Tommy Chong. And she just went, oh my God, oh my God, you got to watch this with me. And all of a sudden in that last episode, do you care if I reveal who it is or
go,
am I like?
Yeah, you okay. Go ahead. I haven't watched it.
The monster is the one that won. It's been confusing everybody. Yeah, the one-eyed
it was
stuff.
So obvious.
And then really, finally, all of a sudden when Monster went on a boat, my brain just went, T-Pain?
Yeah.
And my mom, and then I'm like, oh, wait, and she wrote that down. I'm like, oh, that can't, can that be?
T-Pain can sing.
I have never heard his real voice.
I've always heard him auto-tuned.
Yeah. And I told my mom if I'm right, because I've had no guesses up until then that I'm going to lose it. And when all of a sudden it got revealed and it was T-Pain, I did. I'm like, I literally was like, head on my head. I can't believe it, you know, over and over again. I kicked myself for not knowing it was Margaret Cho. And
I knew that one because I recognized her from some of her. She sings a lot in her comedy stuff.
Yeah. I
recognized Johnny Osmond because he sounds like, you know, let's get down to business. I recognize that anywhere.
My mom knew she knew the football guy. And then I got the lion. Was Rumor Willis and she's like no, and I'm like going famous parents being bullied, Rumor Willis, and she can sing if you've watched Empire. I got Tori Spelling. My mom got Ricky Lake.
Ricky Lake can sing pretty decently too.
I did see her reveal
I got the rabbit.
Yeah, that was like so easy.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. And then with the bee, the moment she sang Tina Turner, we're like, that's definitely Gladys Knight. Yeah. It was just wonderful listening to Gladys Knight all that time.
I love the costume so much. Okay, so this is based on a Korean show. And actually, I don't remember if we did it as a news article, but if you've ever seen Ryan Reynolds in a unicorn costume singing Tomorrow from Annie, that's the Masked Singer in Korea.
Okay.
The costumes aren't nearly as involved, and it's just celebrities show up and they sing, and everyone's like, oh my God, who is it? Who is it? And then they take off their mask and like, oh my God, it's this celebrity.
Did Chloe Bennett ever do it?
I don't know. But it's not so much a, you know, a competition or anything. It's just people, celebrities will show up in a thing and people will be like, oh my God, who could it be? And here it's these super involved costumes and it's like, okay, who's going to win? And I hate all of the judges pretty much, but I love the costumes. The costumes are nuts and I love them. Like it's some sort of freaky, bizarre, like, Hunger Games bondage furry thing.
Broadcast has been successfully terminated by Lauren's husband, Scott.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2013 through 2019.